And welcome back. The Federal District Court of Eastern Missouri has been around for a long time. It has seen and impacted a lot of American and local history. That history is chronicled in a new book titled And Justice for All, A History of the Federal District Court of Eastern Missouri. It was written by local historian author Burton Boxman, who joins me in studio. Burton, nice to see you again. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's find out how you got started on this project. This is really quite an extensive history.
A committee of judges and lawyers in the 8th Federal District were very interested in having a history of this court chronicled. It's a very important court. I was called, and I can't recall who did the calling, but I was asked to come down for an interview to see if I might be interested in writing such a book. I came down to the federal building, my first visit there, and members of the committee were sitting around a table, and they began to ask me questions about me personally. I think I was called because my wife and I had written a number of books, and because I had taught history in government, had a PhD in history, and thought that I might be a likely candidate.
Well, you know, it's a far cry from the last time we talked. The last book that I'm familiar with is Jews in Baseball, which is a little bit different than what you're doing here.
Just slightly, but it was a lot of work, but very interesting.
Why is this an important court? You said it's an important court. Why is it so?
Well, first of all, it takes in the states ranging from North Dakota down to Arkansas. It's a busy court. It's not as busy as New York City or Los Angeles, but a number of cases that begin in this Eastern District Court are appealed to the United States Court of Appeals and eventually reach the Supreme Court. The most obvious one was the Dred Scott decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was a long time ago. The court hadn't been in existence very long when
that was going on.
One of the things that caught my eye, Burton, is the fact that it was basically established, as I recall, to deal primarily with maritime law. We normally think of maritime law, we think of oceans and seas as opposed to rivers.
And admiralty. Maritime and admiralty are questions concerning waterways. It has to be a certain depth. I can't remember the exact number. St. Louis being located at the confluence of the Missouri and Mississippi River was a very, very important river port. And an admiralty case was involving ships colliding. It involved pay of the seamen. It involved claims against the shipping companies. If it dealt with the waterways, it was a federal decision and naturally could go to a federal court.
Is there much action in this area today?
Not as much. Missouri's Federal District Court has evolved into handling many different types of cases, which is very, very interesting because as the history of America began to change, so did, of course, the cases reaching the Federal District Court.
Yeah. You mentioned the Dred Scott case, and, of course, that's one that everyone is familiar with. But my recollection of all of that is that the Dred Scott case bounced around quite a bit from state court, Missouri Supreme Court, federal court here, and ultimately the Supreme Court. Where along the roadway did this district court come into play?
In the 1850s, the federal district judge who had to handle cases for the entire state, petitioned Congress and asked Congress to do one of two things, either give Missouri a number more judges on the federal court or give Missouri another district. Congress had the authority under the Constitution. They create these federal district courts. So Congress in 1857 divided Missouri into two federal districts, the Eastern District going from the Mississippi River westward to Jefferson City, and then the Western District from Jefferson City to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. And what happened here? I mean, what basically was decided by the court here?
The courts, there was one judge. After the admiralty cases, when the Civil War came, there were a number of cases dealing with land disputes as to who owned the land. Then, of course, claims after the Civil War, Missouri being a southern state, but not seceding. There were interesting cases about treason and southern sympathizers. And then later on, as the nation grew, the problems of interstate commerce, monopolies, pretty soon you get into the questions of agriculture and you get into the New Deal and Vietnam War. And it's really a microcosm of American history.
Yeah. Is there a most important case? I mean, it's a long history, and an awful lot's been going on. But as you looked through that history, is there that one big case, or is it Dred Scott?
I don't know if you would call this the most important, but the longest running case was desegregation of schools in the St. Louis area. Four judges heard the case. It kept going. The courts asked the plaintiffs to write a desegregation order that they wanted. They submitted it to the courts. Then it was appealed to the United States Court of Appeals. They handed it back to the district court. They wrote another one. These judges got very, very frustrated hearing these cases, but it dragged on and on. And then more people became plaintiffs and more it got involved, more school districts. It was a very complicated case. So in terms of length, I would say that that's the longest running case. Obviously, to the plaintiff or defendant, the case he or she's involved in would be the most important.
Right.
Some are more interesting than others. Some surprised me. You would think that the federal district court would hear cases that like the Dred Scott. One of the cases that I worked on that I found very interesting was a case during the Vietnamese War where a woman in Ladue had a sign on her lawn protesting the war. Ladue had obviously a very stringent code on what could be placed on a lawn, and that was not one of the one that was allowed. She got a lawyer, and she took that case to the Federal Court of Appeals, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and she won her case.
Wish I could think of her name. That was a celebrated case, a big First Amendment case. Yeah.
Another interesting case that you would think wouldn't go all the way to the Supreme Court was a case involving the Hazelwood School District, a journalism class. A group of students were putting out a newspaper, and they were given free rein, but within certain boundaries. They decided to run an issue where the journalism class would interview students or parents concerning certain questions. They did not check their findings with their sponsor. It was published, and the school district did not allow this. They pulled it from the newspaper. And the question was, is this part of a journalism class, or do the students have free rein? And the Supreme Court ruled that the students would not be allowed. That First Amendment does not give the students the right. This is a class, and the sponsor and the school have a right to dictate what can or cannot be put in the newspaper.
There was a similar case, I think, also involving St. Louis University at some point, if I'm not mistaken.
Now that I'm not as familiar with. Another interesting case was during Vietnam was protesting of the Washington University students against Vietnamese War. I remember vividly, it seemed like yesterday, where students were holed up in the administration building in Brookings Hall, and the ROTC building was on fire. And judges ruled that free speech was limited.
All of the cases you've cited, excepting Dred Scott, of course, are First Amendment cases. Is there a tendency for certain types of cases to find this court, would you say?
I'm trying to a number of cases come under due process, which is a broad case, the 14th Amendment, the right to due process. equal protection under the law, there were segregation cases, which would be under the 14th Amendment. Two come into mind. One was, can a contractor who builds a subdivision put a clause in the contract that the contractor has a right to determine who he should sell the lots to? Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court ruled that that violates a person's due process of law. Another case of due process of law would be segregation of swimming pools. So basically, unless it's a criminal case, most of the cases would come under the First Amendment, which of course includes a number of amendments, the Bill of Rights, due process, war powers of the president. During the Civil War, how far could the president, when Lincoln was arresting people he thought were traitors, Congress thought that he was overstepping his power, and that would be a question of executive decision.
That was the habeas corpus situation.
Habeas corpus case.
Was it not? Coming back to the DeSade case, most of us have been around long enough to remember that case. You said that there were four judges that handled it. Was that simply because it went on for so long that the number of judges changed?
One judge died, and one judge became so frustrated that he gave it to a judge that was just coming on the bench and said, here, you handle it. He took the case as naive as he was. But it's very interesting that I taught at one of the school districts that was involved in the original Rittner High School. There were five school districts that were willing to take on students that were bused because they were enumerated fraud. But most schools were very adamant and fought it long and hard. And other people, other plaintiffs came in on it. And this is probably the longest running case in the history of the court.
I remember very well when that was decided. I was at Channel 2 at the time, and somebody dropped the decision on my desk, and it was enormous. And we had, within a very short period of time, to come up with what the news was out of all of that.
It was impossible to keep up. The courts of appeals kept writing; they kept writing different opinions, and they kept sending it back to the lower court and said, "Here, you write it." And then went back to the Court of Appeals, then to the Supreme Court, just kept hopscotching back and forth.
And, of course, one of the major elements of that was the busing provision that I guess we still acknowledge today, certainly.
The interesting thing is the original plaintiff, Mrs. Liddell, the case started very innocently. Her son's school was segregated. She didn't object to that. What she objected to was that her son's school, an elementary school in the city, was closed. And they had to bus her son to a school that was not as close. And she was not concerned with segregation. She did not feel that her son should be bused back and forth. The school was so close, and she liked the school. She couldn't understand why a student had to be bused. And this, of course, branched out into more complex financing. And the state got involved because they had to foot the bill. And Missouri, being a fiscally conservative state, was very much opposed to the taxpayers having to foot the bill.
The two names that I recall most vividly from this case, the two judges, were Meredith and Hungate. Who is the judge, finally, the judge of record in that?
Hungate. Former Congressman Hungate. And he got a lot of vicious hate mail. He had police protection around the clock. This is a very, very emotional. Many of these cases that reach the court were not emotional to that point. I mean, this you're talking about people's bias, their bigotry, their hatred, and it became so bitter that there was a really concern to what lengths people would go to assassinate a judge. And called it as he saw it, and he admitted it was the toughest case he ever had to hear.
Was he the young one who had just come to the bench? He'd been a former congressman.
He was a neophyte.
Welcome what to a the way club. To,
what a way. And Judge Gunn was another one who was a neophyte, but not by the time the case ended. But Hungate got the privilege, if, quote unquote, of having to hand down the opinion in that decision.
Who are some of the other prominent judges who have served on the court?
Probably, and when you mention his name to lawyers, is Judge Harper, Roy Harper.
Mm-hmm.
He was a tough judge, a law and order judge, especially when it came to income tax evasions and cases of that nature. If I may tell an anecdote, my father was a lawyer, and he didn't discuss his law business with the family. But one day he told his family, myself and my two brothers, be sure that when you begin to earn a living that you pay your income tax. And if you don't pay your income tax and you're going to be arrested and you're going to go to a federal court, make sure that the judge that hears your case is not Roy Harper, because you're going to be sorry. He was a very, very law and order principled. He heard a case of a young man who refused to register for the draft during Vietnam. His name was Goddard. And the penalty for that was 5 years in the penitentiary. And his lawyer, for the defendant's lawyer and his parents, pleaded. And Harper said, the law says 5 years. And there are, in the archives at the Missouri Historical Society on Skinker, there are papers of George Roy Harper and letters mailed to Roy Harper from all over the United States, either castigating Harper or defending Harper, especially from, the war veterans thought he did the right thing. Many sympathetic parents told them that he should have been more lenient. But I don't think there was a case that really drew, probably next to Liddell, drew more personal mail. And I read a number of interesting postcards that were in his file.
When did he serve?
Pardon me?
When did he serve?
He served. He was appointed by Truman.
Huh.
He served the Truman years and into the
48 50s. To 52.
Yeah. In fact, he was a personal friend of Truman. There was a vacancy on the court, and Truman asked Harper, who was not a judge at the time. Harper was visiting the president, and Truman said, Roy, I'm having trouble getting a judge. See if you can recruit somebody. And Harper came back and said, I tried and tried. He said, truth of the matter is, I talked to a lot of prominent lawyers, but number one, they're making more money as a lawyer than a judge. Mm-hmm. And two, they're going to have to give up their law practice and then go to the Senate, and what if they're not confirmed? Well, Truman said, why don't you take the job? Mm-hmm. And Harper said, well, I'll do it for you. Harper was a crony of Truman, and the Republicans were very opposed to this, claiming that Harper could not possibly show impartiality. As it turned out, Harper may have been a tough judge, but he was very, very, very impartial.
By the way, we have both been corrected by one of our listeners pointing out that the Ledoux yard sign case was not protesting the Vietnam War, but rather the Persian Gulf War.
Persian Gulf War?
Yeah. So we both
I think it was earlier than that, but that's all right.
Whatever. You know, one of the things that in going through your book, Burton, that impressed me was the diversity of the judges on our bench. A number of African-American jurists who were quite prominent, still are. And I don't know if that's a little bit different here than it might have been in other district courts. What do you think?
Probably in, for example, the New York City is one district court. So I imagine there that wasn't a problem. The state has such a large population. Los Angeles is a district. Chicago's a district. Probably in this district, it just was not even considered. There were only Caucasians and only males until Judge Cahill broke the color line. And then, of course, the first female judge was Jean Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Now there are a number of women judges, a number of African Americans, and there's two Jewish judges. So that's not even an issue. But it's for years it was the same way baseball was an all-white team. You saw it. You didn't. Many people didn't even give it a consideration. But obviously, as the civil rights movement became strong in this country, why not the federal courts?
All right. We only have a few seconds left. Sure. Is there anything else that sets this court here, located here, apart in your mind?
No. I learned a lot. Prior to writing this book, the only case I ever heard of that was in this court was Dred Scott. I had no idea. So it was a good lesson for me, but I thoroughly enjoyed, and I thoroughly enjoyed working with the publisher.
All right. Well, Burton Boxman, once again, congratulations to you. It represents an awful lot of hard work, obviously. It's almost a 500-page book, so that doesn't come easily. Thank you so much. And once again, for our listeners, the title of the book is And Justice for All, A History of the Federal District Court of Eastern Missouri, written by our guest, local historian and author Burton Boxman. Good to see you again, sir. Thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis Cardinals manager Mike Matheny about his new book, The Matheny Manifesto, and about other things relating to baseball. Hope you can join us then. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.